So in this class, I want to continue before we move on to the next point, which has to do with our role in the universe. I'd like to finish an added point about the uniqueness of human beings. I said last week that there's a common denominator in those areas where a human being is not just an intelligent baboon, and that is the ability for the human being to break beyond himself. And I gave as an example of depreciation of art. And just to refresh your memory, I'm going to give you an example that I did not give last week. And I wish we had a piano in this room, because I could demonstrate exactly what I'm talking about. But there is a word in English, which is the word harmony. Does anybody here is there anybody who's not clear what the meaning of harmony is in music? Harmony, for example, if I sing a certain melody line and somebody else sings a higher line or a lower line of melody. So what happens when you have those two voices coming together? And I wish I could actually do it, because on the occasion we have somebody who could sing the song in the shul, I'll sometimes go into the harmony. When you hear two people singing a duet, or two violins, let us say, and they're doing a duet, there's something about the harmony that grabs you. And how do you describe that part? You don't. It's part of art. Art meaning that which is communicated by the medium, in this case, music. There's a deeper, higher, more expansive, whichever word you could use, element that we can't put into words, but human beings, we get it. We appreciate it. We sense it. It's the reason why we go there and listen to the music. So this is an example of the fact that a human being can reach beyond himself. It's also the reason why a human being can be selfless, not just on occasion, but all the time. And I'm a man, I'll say this. Just ask any woman who ever carried a baby for 9 months. Talk about being selfless all the time. I know what you're thinking. This man has no clue what he's talking about. I know, that's my point. This is what I'm saying to you. All right. Okay. So now let us go to this sheet in front of you, because our sages were very careful and very nuanced in the words they used. Now, we know that in English, I know you know how to read it, but I'm going to interrupt in a second. What it says is, in English, we speak in terms of these categories. Mineral, the sun, the earth, the water. Vegetables or vegetation, things that grow. Animal, and humans. But the sages, they use different words. Now, mineral, they called silent. I tell you that this is at least a full class why they chose the word silent for the minerals, meaning the wind, all of those things, everything. Not for now. We might get to address it a touch. Growing. Okay, we get that, growing. But I'll give you a little message here. The Rebbe said once to somebody something in English, a line that I have not forgotten, and it reverberates in my head all the time. He said, every living thing must grow. Now you said, well, what's novel about that? So I'll ask myself a question in public. Did I grow today? I'm not talking about my waistline. Did I grow today? So then maybe I'm living, but am I living? You hear it? Okay. So living, things grow. Then, I'm sorry, growing, right? Growing. Then there's living. So all of the animals are called living. I'm not going to talk about that. Our point is about human beings. Our sages categorize as a speaker. Now you could say, I know for a fact, I'll just depict something that I saw with my own eyes, but you all know this. There was in the street somewhere, I don't even remember where, but there was a crow of all things that was in trouble on the road, and there were cars. And for some reason, all around, there were these crows perched wherever on everything, and they were crowing, and you could just see they were all trying to tell this bird, get out of danger. It was just, wow. So what's this business about saying you want to know what's different between us and the animal kingdom, and of course those the other ones as well, that we can speak? What's the point? Now, I wrote here that after listening to this week's class, meaning last week's class, you might be able to answer this question. So I'm going to put the recorder on hold. And I would like to ask, if anybody has any idea, why does being a speaker make us express, I'm sorry, the uniqueness of our humanity? All right, let me explain it this way. The central point of humanity is, which other creatures do not have, is our ability to reach beyond ourselves. You said a word. Do you want to say something? You said to think. So the difference between speaking and thinking, I'm going to get there in a second. Because, in fact, you know what? Let me do this right now. I wrote further down the page, for added pondering and discussion, I wrote, by definition, a speaker speaks to another. Is there no humanity when a person is alone or with others not speaking to them? In other words, when I'm thinking, is there no humanity, really? Are you telling me when Einstein was pondering and came up with a theory of relativity, there was no human element there? He was the same as a dolphin? Is that what you're trying to tell me? So I'm going to get there, right? Okay. This is very good. Very, very good. So the thing is, you use the word abstract. And I would like to take that idea of abstract and concretize it. Now, that's a square circle, right? To concretize the abstract. But I think that's for example, when I gave my words that I use to explain what art is, my words, not interested in the dictionary, really, but just our experience, what I'm endeavoring to do is to concretize the abstract, that which we find intangible, so at least that we can touch it on some level. So to concretize the abstract, when we speak, we can very easily deal with things that are otherwise out of reach. So for example, I notice that if somebody is in a certain mood and I'm going to modulate my words, my expression, my tempo, my body language, all of those things to try and reach inside of them. What I'm doing is I'm using words to go beyond, Now, so not only artistic expression, but if you think about it, every single thing that human beings have accomplished, they've accomplished by, having ideas which are beyond themselves. And here comes the next part. Our sages tell us, and it's printed in this book, which I'm not going to take the time to open up and find the page, but Hillel the Elder, he lived about 2,000 years ago, shortly before the destruction of the Second Temple. He says some very famous words, "Im eina lili mili." If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? I'm not going to talk about that right now. "Ukshani la'atzmi ma'ani." If I'm for myself, what am I? In other words, let's say I don't speak to anybody, and I only concern myself with myself, what am I? In other words, of course human beings have to take out time for themselves. You have to go to sleep. You have to eat. You have to take care of your bodily needs. But at the end of the day, your purpose here, my purpose here, involves breaking beyond yourself. The animal, they're only interested in themselves. If they, for example, care about the other crows in that example, it's because they're programmed to be concerned with part of the group. That's how they're made. But a human being can, just like a human being can decide to do something that no animal can decide. Do you know that no animal can volunteer to decide to smoke cigarettes so it should kill them? Only human beings can do this. Just like we can choose to do that. We can choose to do something and say, you know, there's a group of people, I cannot stand being amongst them. But I want to give some of my supper to them. They shouldn't be hungry tonight. Right? So it's not my self-focus that is driving me to do it, but it's altruistic, meaning to say it's beyond myself. A person can reach beyond myself. And the reason that, or at least one of the reasons that the sages choose a speaker is because not only do we communicate things that are beyond ourselves, but that primarily we're here not for ourselves. So they choose speaking because, of course, you're a human being when you're thinking through the thoughts and when you're planning all those things. Of course, you're human. But at the end of the day, when is that humanity expressed? Not when you sit there thinking in it, when you're thinking of it. the humanity, or one element of the humanity of Albert Einstein, is not primarily expressed when he sat there and he came up with his idea of theory of relativity. Rather, his theory of relativity resulted in so many scientific discoveries that altered completely the face of the 20th century that Time magazine decided to call him the man of the century, because it influenced so many and so much outside of him. So therefore they chose speaker, because by definition speaker means that you're using your humanity outside of yourself. And you use words to convey abstract ideas. Not only do you use words, we speak with silence. You just heard a pregnant pause. Why do we call it a pregnant pause? Because it speaks. And you're watching me speaking without words, right? So therefore, when you say speaking, it could be with words, it could be without words. Okay. So now, where does this relate to the ability of the human being to choose right from wrong? The very last question, actually. I won't read the whole page because you could read it in front of you. Well, how does that relate to right from wrong? It's actually very simple. Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back actually either 2 or 3 weeks ago, I don't recall, where we spoke a rather deep class about freedom of choice versus everything being predetermined. And I'd like to share an extra nuance which is going to bring it all together. And with that, we will close this segment and move on to the next one right now, which is as follows. I said that a human being, his uniqueness is that he can break out of his animalism and he can choose right from wrong. To be more nuanced, I should say it differently. A human being has the freedom to maintain his status quo as an animal, meaning to say every time we do something wrong, every time, 100% of the time, we choose to do something wrong, it's because our self-centeredness, which is also animalism, because an animal, self-preservation, that's their story. That status quo is what's running my behavior at the moment. So the choice, the freedom of choice, is the freedom to choose to break out of my animalism. We have our animal part. That's just the way we are. And our choice is when we break out of it. When do we break out of it? Anytime we go beyond our self-centeredness. So let's say a person thinks, I would like to do something to advance the human condition. And he sits down and he thinks, and he comes up with an idea. I'll pick on the theory of relativity just because it's so, we all know approximately what it's about, but thoroughly, most of us don't know it. I'm just telling you honest. Most of us don't know what exactly is this time-space continuum. How does that work exactly? I don't, and I've tried. Most of us don't. So here's a person, he's thinking about it. But now, using words, he can put this together, he can communicate it, and guess what happens? He advances things for the benefit of humanity. That's not breaking out of self-centeredness. Of course it is. So this is where it all comes together, that our sages, with one word, in English it's two words, but in Hebrew it's one word, that human beings are called medaber. They wrapped it all up in one word, medaber. So that is the uniqueness of the human being. Now, this actually is going to be a perfect transition for the next segment, which is, what is our responsibility to the universe? When I say to the universe, I mean everything outside of human beings. So it can be, well, let's take a look at the categories. To the mineral, to the in other words, the universe, the planet, the environment, whichever one, however words you want to use modern words, vogue words, to vegetation, to animals. What is our responsibility? And that is the segment, the next piece that we're going to deal with it. And in order to do that, we're going to open up the Chumash. I will tell you which page. Before proceeding, I'd like you to take the sheet and turn it to the other side, where you have the black square at the bottom. Because I wrote on the group what we're going to be doing today. And if you take a look, that we covered items 1 and 2, and we're now going to item 3. because somebody wrote on the group, what is the subject for this coming week? And really, the general outline is already in the advertisement. And it said, and I wrote, the next question is advertising the publicity. What is the responsibility to the world around us, meaning outside of humans? I'm going to make a comment. Just by the way, the subject after that one is the roles of men and women. And we're not afraid of that subject. It's a good subject, as you're going to find out. You're going to be amazed by it, actually. But right now, our subject is our responsibility to the world around us. Now, I just said a moment ago that we're not talking about humans, but the truth of the matter is, I'm thinking that I don't know that we'll get to it this week, but that next week I should at least talk a little bit about the relationship between Jews and non-Jews within God's plan. Really, it does not belong here. Why? Because everything we're learning now is for humanity. It's not just for Jewish people. This is way before the giving of the Torah. So in other words, if I were giving a class on this to non-Jewish people, every single word that we've said until now would be the same. Every single word. But since, thanks to the group and the class, the discussion was brought up actually privately with me, I thought, you know what? Maybe at least we'll do a segment on it, the relationship between Jewish people and non-Jewish people, because it's, you could say it's under the umbrella of what's our role towards the universe. So I'm just injecting that in, and here it is. So now what I'd like to do is I'd like to first show you something that if somebody wanted to be critical of the Bible, this is one of the places they would go to. Now, it's a little hard for me to do because this translation is better than most, and it therefore doesn't sound as troubling. But I'm going to do it anyway. We're in the 6 days of creation. We're now on the sixth day. And take a look at verse 28. So now man has been created in God's image. Vayivarech otam malakim, God blessed them. And I'm deliberately not looking into the English, even though some of you can only look into the English, because I want to be much more closer to the literal translation. And it says, Vayomer lehem elokim, God said to them, meaning to say to the first Adam, who, as we're going to find out in the next segment, which is in the after Passover probably, was a male and female combined. He said, Pruravu, be fruitful and multiply, umilo es haaretz, and fill the world. And then he says, V'chiv shuha. Now this word, V'chiv shuha, can be translated in many ways, because just as in any language, a word can have multiple meanings. So kivshua can mean conquer it. It can mean dominate it. And you say, what's the difference between conquering and dominate? Conquering means we won, now I'm going to sleep. But dominating means I'm in charge. There's a nuanced difference. Kivshua can also mean I'm going to harness it. In other words, it's the same thing as dominate, except dominate is I'm running it just because I'm stronger than you. And I'm running it, maybe I have a reason, maybe I don't. And maybe my reason is sadism. Maybe it's to brag to the next guy. But when I say harness it, then I don't mean that. Then I mean to adjust it towards a purpose. So you went from conquering, same word, right? Same word, from conquering to dominating to harnessing, all can be the translation of this word and be accurate. And the question, which one does it mean? So before I will prove to you which one it means, I'm going to make it a little worse first. Because then the next word is uradu, which means and descend. Now the word uradu is also used in classical Hebrew. I don't know about modern Hebrew simply because my modern Hebrew isn't very good, especially in light of all the modern words. But in classical Hebrew, radu can mean to be in charge as well. Why? Because I'm in charge and you little minions are down there, right? So going down. So you have the same idea. It could be I'm here, you're down there, squash. Or it could mean, because I'm here and you're down there, I'm going to help you get into shape. You see that? So if you just want to be a self-centered animal, then you're going to say, oh, God says that we should conquer the world and we should crush it. You could say that. Now I'm going to prove to you why that's impossible. Because if you read the verse 26 before, I'm sorry, verse 27. We could go 26, but I'll make it simple. Verse 27, What's the story here? Vayivra Elokim et Adam. God created the Adam, but Salmo in his form. Whatever that means, it means that on some level, man is like God. So now, could you imagine this? Let me take you to a place called Greek mythology, which is a nice way of saying something that's very, very not nice. You see, here it says in verse 26, God says, let us make man in our image. What did the Greeks do? They said, let us make God in man's image. You heard the difference? They made God in man's image. So, for example, what is perfection? Perfection is like the statues they have with the perfect muscles. You know, when they did the sculpture of Moses, people coming from all over the world to learn anatomy, this is true, even where the veins are, just from the sculpture, you know, they just worshipped, you know, and it's perfectly wonderful to have these adult males in their birthday suits sculptured in the streets of their country, you know what I'm saying? And especially if you pay attention to what they're doing in those sculptures, because we make God in man's image. So if you make God in man's image, and you speak like a Greek, and you think Greek, then you say as follows. So, of course, God says, be fruitful, fill the world, conquer it and crush it. Stoop on it, right? Just step on it. That's because God has created the man's image. But what if we actually read what is the truth, which is that God, that man is created in God's image? If man is created in God's image, is it possible for God to say, you're made in my image? You know what you're here for? Because here God is telling us the purpose. He's blessing them and he says, here's your story. Be fruitful, multiply, fill the world and conquer it and crush it. Is this possible? It's impossible. In other words, God is saying, you know what? You want to have some fun? You got a nice big machine, a power saw, and you want to show off to your friends? Go to that tree that's as wide as two cars and just chop it down and just burn it on fire and waste it. That's called being created in God's image. Do you see how stupid it is? Okay, so we're not interested in the stupidity. We want to hear, what does it really mean? What it really means is, God is saying, you have God-like elements to yourself. God is not limited by nature, and I injected into you. You're not limited by nature. Not only that, just like I am giving you instructions, I'm giving you the ability to generate and inject in others to break beyond themselves, which is what we're doing in this class, if you think about it. We're being a speaker. Do you see now how it's all coming together? Right? So if that's the case, we now are going to read it as follows. Be fruitful, multiply, fill the world, and harness it. Because harness it means, as I said before, and that's because using the English language, I'm not using this translation, he wrote, take control over it. It's not bad. Take control of it what? Because you're a control freak? Oh, you want to go right? No, I'm telling you to go left. Bam. You know, control freak. So I like the word harness it, because that gives it reason. So now I want you to direct this world for a purpose. Now, you definitely remember. We had four classes on the subject, why am I here? Do you see how it all comes together? When you go through Bereshit and you go from the beginning, page by page, you take these ideas. Of course, even though they're individual ideas, which is why you can come to a class even if you haven't come before. But you see how it's built on the previous ones, right? So now, why are we here? How am I going to harness this world? So now what I'm going to do is I am going to take a risk for the rest of today's class. And I have to tell you that what I'm going to follow this with, it's been reverberating in my head, because I have to tell you that this particular subject I've been through for many years. So when I first was putting together this class, I knew way in the beginning, when I say what is our role within the universe, or role for the universe, I knew what I was going to cover. And I knew that I would come to a certain crossroads, which we're at this minute, and I would have to decide whether I'm going to say certain things or whether it's unwise to say them. And I decided that I'm going to say them. Why? Because I think you're all very, very intelligent people, and you know that I'm telling you above board my truth, especially those who've been here longer. You know me, I'm an open book, and I hate secrets. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about. Today, we live in a world where there are movements that are concerned with the state of the universe, the state of environment, animals, and all those kinds of things. And I would like to make some comments about them, not because this is a class about environmentalism, it is not. Not because this is a class about animal rights, it is absolutely not. It's a class about what does God want us to do within this world. What I would like to do is I would like to separate what I'm about to share with you as part of God's instructions for us, for the universe. I'd like to separate it from environmentalism, and I'd like to separate it from any animal rights movements or anything that relates to these things. And in order to separate it, I'm going to have to say certain things that may trigger you to consider me in a certain political light. Politics is not my business. I didn't find in this book or any of the books thereafter which tell me that I have to have the right political opinion. If you ask me what's my opinion of today's news, maybe I could give you my opinion. But I'm not stupid. I should say this, not stupid. I'm not young enough to think that I'm definitely right. Right? Okay. Besides, I know how to make enemies. Tell them my politics. What I'm saying to you is, I'm going to say certain things. I'm not talking about politics. I want to talk about how God wants me and you to look at the environment, to look at the world, to look at animals, to look at all these things. Now, since we're made in God's image, you already know it's not going to be negative. In other words, do you think that from this it's going to emerge that you can get your, $5,000 rifle, if there is such a thing, I don't know, to go out there and during hunting season and just kill off all of those species that are almost extinct? You think that's what it's going to end up in? Of course not. So, okay. So now, having given that introduction, and I hope you will actually do that, I'm going to tell you a few things. First of all, just as a matter of accuracy, concerning the environment, pollution and environmentalism are two separate subjects. Pollution is very simple. When the cars drive in the lower mainland, you get a mist and you cannot see the mountains. And then when there's a lot of rain, it washes out the sky and you can see the mountains from here clearly, especially if it rains for a few days in a row, you have strong sunshine, and that has to do with pollution. Now, if nobody was driving, you could see the mountains pretty much every day unless there's mist as part of the weather. Okay? That's not environment. Environmentalism is a claim which, if you think back, because a lot of you are, I'll just say it nicely, approximately, give or take a decade or so, my age, all right? But then you, if you paid attention, you will remember that certainly 20 years ago, there were different calls that if we don't do such and such for the environment, the world is going to come to an end in 10 years. Of course, the media won't talk about it. The media needs to make sales. They're not in the business of truth. What I would like to say to you is as follows, that science has a certain format. We spoke about it already, not because I said so, because you know that that's what it is. In science, you want to find accurately what is. And the way you find out what is, you have an idea, and you can perform an experiment which will allow you to predict an outcome. And if you can predict an outcome enough times, then you are going to accept that your explanation is correct, knowing full well that maybe some years later, you'll come up with a better explanation. So Newton, he came up with the great ideas, and they were predictable. But after Newton, along came others, and they came up with other ideas, and they were better explanations. So therefore, even the theory of relativity, which has allowed so many inventions, we know in the world of science that it wouldn't be surprising if somehow, when they do finally come up with that unifying theory of everything, which is what they're looking for, it's possible we'll find a theory that will replace the theory of relativity. We understand this. So the reason I'm saying this is because in environmentalism, the way it's presented to the public is the most opposite of science you could ever think of. Once upon a time, they said there was a hole in the ozone. Don't trust me. Go to Google. Look it up. That's not what they meant. They didn't mean H-O-L-E as it's in the dictionary. They used to say the concern was global warming. They made a change. It's climate change. I never knew climate stays the same. What I'm trying to say to you is very simply this, that if you try to drill down to the core, because Jewishly, I don't have to have a Jewish opinion on environmentalism. I just need to know one thing. Is it real? Is it not? I happen to have spent a lot of time over a lot of years trying to see scientifically from those who really know what they're talking about, those who don't have an agenda, and what do they say? And I found out certain things. That's not our class. I'm not interested in sharing it here. What I'm saying is the popular projected idea of environmentalism is not our subject here, because I don't believe, you can disagree with me, I don't believe that you have to lie to tell the truth. How could you say there's a hole in the ozone when what you really mean is 50% depletion? Oh, because that's how we're going to get the people to... Okay, you're not being scientific. So I don't want to talk to you, okay? So is there an issue with climate change or not? You could figure that out. But what I'm saying is I want to distance myself from what is popular. I'm not here to show, oh, Judaism also joined the bandwagon. And let me now talk about animal rights. I want to distance myself from animal rights, not because it's okay to go there with a club and take one of those animals and see how many bonks on the head until it hits the ground. No. I want to distance myself from that. I want to put in perspective when God said to the first Adam, and he said, you should harness the world. What did that mean in relationship to animals? And that's what I'm going to tell you. And now I'm going to tell you one more thing about environmentalism. Let's just say that every concern the environmentalists have is scientifically accurate. Let's just accept that for a minute, which I don't, because when you start reading deeper, you see that there's a lot of lies there. Okay. As I said, nothing to do with pollution, different subject. Point is like this. Why should we be concerned with the environment? Because otherwise, in so and so many years, we won't have a world to live in. So the reason for being concerned is because we're going to lose out. Self-centeredness. Animalism. I didn't say ever that animalism is wrong, because animals are not wrong. Animals were created by the Almighty for a purpose. And that purpose is just like everything else in the world, that us humans should harness it towards God's purpose. So what I'm saying is environmentalism, it's rooted in the concern for self-preservation. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm saying it isn't godliness directed. So now, having said all that, now I'm going to share with you what it really is. Because what I want you to understand is that what I'm going to share with you now is how Jewish people who followed God's word behaved for thousands of years before people even understood anything about environment like we understand today. This is how Jewish people understood it. And listen to how simple it is and how far-reaching it is at the same time. Watch this. Let's go back to verse 28. It's God blessed them and he said to them, Perurah will be fruitful, multiply. Milu ha'aretz, fill the world. V'chivshu and harness it. So if you're going to harness the world, why would you burn down a tree for no reason? That's not harnessing the world. It's called, in Hebrew, there's a Jewish term, and the Talmud discusses it 1,500 years ago. Yeah, you heard that right. Baal tashkit. Baal means do not. Baal tashkit. Don't waste God's world. Why shouldn't I waste God's world? I want to enjoy myself. The reason you shouldn't waste God's world is because God's world is here for a reason. You think only humans are here for a reason. That blade of grass is also here for a reason. So if you're harnessing it for God's purpose, then you're doing the right thing. But if you're just pulling the leaves off the tree just because, I don't know why, whatever, just pulling the leaves off, then what you're doing is you're wasting God's purpose. Now, it so happens that if we all lived this way, we wouldn't have all of these concerns about pollution, environment, this and that. Okay, we invent the car and we're harnessing the world. We have a wonderful invention. And I'll say it like this. Now that we have a car, we can have an ambulance rush people to the hospital. And helicopters lift people from remote places to the hospital. Okay, so you can't do away with it. We're not going to go back to the horse and buggy, where the flies from the manure are going to kill people by spreading disease. Just so you know, if you ever wanted to go back to the old way. All right, so we have to think about it. What are we going to do? Because what is the right way to harness God's purpose? And every single time is a new analysis. And the answer is you do the best you can. And then you come up with new scientific discoveries. And you say, wow, we don't have to do that. We can actually have an unmanned vehicle, let's say, I'm not promoting it, but let's just suppose it was a safe thing to do, an unmanned Well, I will tell you one, actually. You have a drone. I know today drone means those little things that people buy for $1,000 and whatever. But many years ago, I saw a guy from Israel with English speaker, beard down to his stomach like this. And I met him in Vancouver. And I said, okay, why are you here? He said, I'm here from Israel because I am trying to sell the Canadian government Israeli drones, meaning airplanes that had no pilot, in order for them to fly the plane in the middle of the smoke of forest fires to help with the forest fires without endangering lives. You hear it? So this is, oh, you have a new invention. Now we can harness the world for God's purpose even better. You hear it? So all of a sudden, now you see why I gave the whole introduction about environmentalism and an introduction to the junction that it's nothing to do with politics and all of that, right? Because what I want you to hear now is if you think this way, you think about this. Okay, paper tissues. Maybe I should use the cloth tissues. If you remember, at least then when I grew up, everybody had a handkerchief and they embroidered names. Remember that? Okay. Yeah? Well, if you want to harness the world by spreading disease through your handkerchief, then you should go back to the nicely, you know, with a monogrammed handkerchief in your pocket and use it for a whole week before it goes to the laundry. You know what I'm saying? So we understand. Yes, this paper, there's an expense to the paper and all the plastic. But then again, because of this plastic, I can pull out one and I'm about to use one. So I'm going to do it. And now the next one wasn't even touched by a hand. Oh, so a harness, you see what's happening all of a sudden. You look at the whole world differently. I don't say to myself, oh, plastic is bad for the environment. Here, we're losing the trees. Oh, we are stopping the spread of disease. We're harnessing the world. And in a moment, I'm going to talk about animals. So let us talk about animal rights. Look, I don't know if animals have rights or don't. Meaning to say, rights is an abstract concept. The government says, we allow you to speak whatever you want. You can say that the prime minister can jump in the lake and we cannot put you in jail. It's an abstract idea. Do animals have those rights? You know what? That's so not the point. I'm not talking about pets now. I'll make a small reference to it soon. But talk about animals in general. It says here, fill the world and harness it. So now, is it okay to harness the world by causing animals undue suffering? And Jewishly, the answer is no. Not only that, for all you pet owners, now I'm going to spoil your supper and your dinner and breakfast forever. I'm telling you, it's true. To make sure that we understood this, do you know what the sages instituted millennia ago? That if you own an animal, because everybody had agriculture and you had animals, before you eat yourself, you have to feed your animal. Not because you worship animals, that's called idolatry. But just because it's an animal, and just because you're angry at your spouse, or at your kids, or at your mom, or at your whatever, doesn't mean you can kick your dog. It's a living thing. Yes, they are living machines, living robots. That's fine. And being living robots, they still have emotions. You can't cause them to suffer. So, now you just consider that. So now remember, and I really mean it to all of you. You wanna fulfill what we're reading here? Before you eat, if it's time for your dog to eat, or if you have a parrot, or whatever you have, and it's time for them to eat, yes, God wants you to feed them first. So you remember, not that you're worshiping them, because they're on a lower level than you. But you have to, just because they're on a lower level doesn't mean you can be like those, let's go hunting. I already gave a few descriptions of such people. Okay? So that's one of the ways that you remind yourself. Yeah. What I'd like to say, you're saying is, I'm repeating the question for the recording, isn't it because it's your responsibility to care for those that are lesser than yourself? So let me first undo your question and then come back to the point. I would undo your question by saying that, let's suppose I'm vegan, but I'm living not in modern times, so I don't need animals. Why is it my business that there is a fox and there is a sheep and the fox is going to catch the sheep? Sheep is a wild sheep. It's running wild. Okay, it's a mountain goat, etc. So it's not possible for human beings to protect all the animals in the universe. And not only that, I don't know what the percentage is, but we all know it's a big one. And that includes in the marine life as well. That they only have one question in their head. Who's for lunch? Right? What could you do? Right? That's how it goes.
So the salmon eats the smaller fish. And then along comes the whale and eats, I don't know, 25 of them at once. Right? And the bear comes and eats the salmon also. Well, you know, so you have to be careful when you say our responsibility to help. Now, but if you're going to take, now I'm coming back to what you're really saying. That's what I said. I'll deconstruct and then reconstruct. But now you're saying, if I'm going to harness the world, so I'm going to grab some horses and I'm going to train them and I'm going to have some sheep and I'm going to have some dogs that will help me with the sheep and I'm going to have some goats for the milk and cows and so on and so forth. Of course you have responsibility. But the reason that I am not going there is because that is what you do if you don't want them to drop dead. Okay? But if you want to do what God wants you to do, then you don't cause them to suffer. In other words, they're hungry. You have to feed them. See, if you don't milk them on time, then you're going to have a very sick animal. Besides the pain, you have a very sick animal, right? But here what we're saying is, the animals, yes, you can harness them, provide you do not impose upon them undue suffering. I say undue. The reason I say undue is because the only thing on this planet that exists without suffering is something like a pebble. That if there's a hurricane, the pebble doesn't care. But there's pain everywhere. So that's that when I say undue, meaning what you're inducing without reason, just because you think you're a guy. So with that in mind, if you just take that simple idea, it's going to be very easy. And now I'm going to tell you what happens when you grow up with these ideas and you are a little kid and you go to London Zoo. And even when I came here to Vancouver Zoo, which used to be here, Stanley Park is not there anymore. Thank God. And I'll tell you why I say thank God in a minute. Over here, we drive and we see eagles all the time, a whole year, actually. First time I saw an eagle was in London Zoo. I never forget this. I don't know how young I was, very young. And I see there's like a dome type of cage like this. It's round, and there's an eagle in there. And there's no room for this eagle to spread its wings. I'm not even talking about flying. And I looked at caves, and I would see these birds, and there's certain birds, I don't remember the names. And it's like they got these, like, you know, like peacocks have big trains, other birds like that. And it's almost going from one side to the other. I saw this even in Vancouver Zoo when it was here in 1983, 84. And I'm saying to myself, in all these cases, I ask myself, isn't it tsar ba'alei chaim, which means suffering to animals, for a bird not to be able to fly? And I'm sorry, please don't tell me if you do this in your home. But let's say I wanted to have a parrot. Oh, so you clip its wings, it shouldn't fly. Okay, is that right? You want to have a parrot. I have a question. And I don't know the answer, truthfully, I don't. But is there a way you can feel comfortable knowing that you are not causing a bird undue suffering by confining it to a box that's a few feet by a few feet by a few feet? As a little kid, growing up as a religious, knowing that we're not supposed to cause animal suffering, I never understood this. Finally, we're waking up. You want to go see animals, you put yourself in a cage called a car, and you put them in a wide whole wilderness, you call it a safari, and you drive through. Okay, that I understand. You give them, you know, they couldn't, at least when I was younger, so I was told, they couldn't understand why the animals don't reproduce in the zoo almost ever. I know why. I'm going to turn off the recording for a second. You don't understand that you've stressed out the animal from what the way it's supposed to be, that it's that even in the spring it's not interested? Like, where is your head? So all of a sudden, we have a whole different view. We don't need animal rights anything. Do animals have rights? What difference does it make? You know now what's the meaning of harnessing. So some animals you can tame and they can and they're happy to serve. Okay, good. I want to say a very short word about having pets, because truthfully, it's not necessary to explain. Because really, I think if you just take these two ideas, what I said about environment, which of course includes, I mean, why would you pollute if you can avoid it if you're trying to harness the world towards God, right? Well, why would you do that? So I think you basically, with these two ideas, can you imagine this? With these two ideas, we already know everything we need to know about the world around us. Because when we discover that you have too much traffic causes this and this, okay, we got to change. But I want to mention something about pets, because I just feel we live in such a society, and to say nothing about it, maybe it's missing, I'm not sure. So I decided I'm going to. Look, the way I understand Judaism, I don't see in Judaism there being a discussion about having pets. You should have pets. You shouldn't have pets. I don't see it. Because it's like, it seems to me, so maybe I'm wrong, but I think this is what I'm going to say, I think is accurate. Like many things in this world is filled with things that are permissible. Should you engage in the permissible? Well, it just depends how on track you want to be with God's purpose. So let me just share something that has nothing to do with animals for a second, and how this is God, part of God's purpose. So let's say a person has a hobby, and I'm going to pick on a hobby that is definitely, I don't believe, ever going to be my hobby. Okay? Knitting. All right? Okay. So you might say, why are you knitting? Because, I don't know, it allows me to sort of space out and just relax. So what I just did is I showed you is that getting involved in knitting for this particular person is not so much about the product. Okay, so maybe they know how to knit scarves or complicated things like gloves. Okay, let's just say that's the case. But that's not really the story. The real story is that a human being, we need rejuvenation of various kinds, not just sleep. We need rejuvenation, especially after going through intense situations. So for such and such a person, knitting, is it does it for them. Okay, good. For some people, having a friend in a dog, it does things that are good for them emotionally. Okay, fine. I'm going to tell you for me, I'm only speaking for myself. It doesn't mean I'm speaking for you. But what I'm doing is I'm giving it a context within God's plan. For me, I don't believe I would ever have a pet dog for the reason as follows. To me, the fact that the dog will accept me no matter how much of an animal I behave that day and if I swear at it or whatever, I won't kick it, okay? But to me, that gives me a place I can go to without any imperative of refining myself. And for me, if I want to give love to another human being, it doesn't matter who it is, I'm going to have to be introspective. I'm going to have to give off myself. So for me, I'm not planning to use pets as my escape hatch, rejuvenation, call it what you want. And this is really the reason why it's rare amongst religious Jews. But it doesn't mean it's prohibited. In other words, what I just did is maybe you have a dog. I know a bunch of you do have dogs and have had dogs if you don't have one now. But what I just did is I put into perspective where a dog as your best friend, as they call it, could be part of God's purpose. Not just a dog that's going to help the blind, which of course it goes without saying. But if you could say, look, I need a place where I can go to where I'm just not judged, where I just can be accepted as I am. And a dog does it for me. Okay. So you still have the same dog. You still have the same relationship. But now you put it into perspective. The dog is happy. Of course, the dog has no stress when he makes friends with a human being. Because he's begun, right? He doesn't feel restricted at all. But all of a sudden, you're able to place it within this purpose. Right? So all of a sudden, this is our responsibility and our relationship to the universe around us.